Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Willie Donick here with you on the east side of town. Chase McCabe is on the west side. Good morning, Chase.
Hello, Willie D.
And Darren McFarlane will be reporting in shortly from the south side of town. Darren, are you in?
Not quite. Almost.
He's not in. Okay, Marquise Munson.
I'm here. Darren is also
here. Holding it down.
Okay, there's Darren.
What's up, guys?
Oh, you know, just hanging out.
Hey, Darren.
Technology.
Today, we would be sitting here talking about the national champion.
What a game. What a game last night.
Well, we don't know that. It may have been a dud. Who knows? It may have been a 20-point blowout. Who knows what we'd have been saying? I don't know. But I know that we would have been talking about somebody being crowned the national champion and one shining moment and something that happened last night. But unfortunately, we will not have that conversation and we'll never have that conversation for the 2019-2020 basketball season, college basketball season. That's sad. It's very sad. But that's the case. And these are the times that we're in, so we are not talking about a national champion last night. I mean, think about it. That would have been our focus last night. That, you know, that's what we would have been paying very, very close attention to, and yet we are not going to have that and never will have it.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we might be talking about today, hopefully would have been talking about, would have been round one matchup.
Oh, we would have been talking about it no matter
what. Wednesday or Thursday.
No, we would have been talking about it no matter what. So, yeah, the matchups would have been in place, and we would know when it was going to who was playing who, and round one would be getting ready to get geared up and started tomorrow in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yep.
Yeah, John Hines spoke yesterday via Zoom and, you know, of course, was asked a lot of questions about that and, you know, where they, you know, kind of how they're handling this process and where he thinks the team is. And it was interesting to hear, you know, some of those comments. And I think the thing that stood out to me, we played some of it, is the constant communication that the staff and the team, the players, they're having right now, basically trying to stay sharp in case they get the call that they're going to get close to resuming things. But I think we all agree that that's going to be a while.
I think that the important thing that they're trying to do is to keep everybody mentally engaged. As we were talking to Hal Gill about this yesterday, I mean, they can't skate, right? You can't go to the ice, at least as far as I know. I don't think the guys are skating, and that's going to take some time to build back up when they get the green light. But I think just trying to stay physically in shape, you know, in your own way with the workouts that the strength coach has given them, David Good, and to stay mentally engaged with the team, that's going to be something that's really interesting. If they do resume the season at some point and you're jumping right back in, and John Hines mentioned this a number of times yesterday, I mean, you're jumping right in at the critical time of the season. So who can jump in and pick up where they left off, or who can jump in and just be at the top of their game as much as possible? Because, you know, it's not going to be perfect, but somebody is going to take advantage of the situation. Right, and it could be as wide open as it's ever been. It's wide open every year anyway, but what kind of wild card would this be if they can get this going?
Hope we find out. I hope we can actually have that conversation. That's what you know, that's what we're all hoping and keeping our fingers crossed that we get to have that conversation. But you know, who knows where this is all going. Obviously, we're going to keep talking about stuff that is getting thrown out there, what's realistic, what's not. But these are the times that we've been accustomed to. I mean, April, March and April are supposed to be great sports months, right? By the way, we would also be gearing up for what starting on Thursday this week? Kind of a big golf event.
Oh, yeah, the
kind
Masters.
Of where they play for a green jacket.
Yeah, the Masters.
Oh, yeah. Not a gold jacket, but a green jacket. I heard somebody yesterday referencing it as a gold jacket. Actually, that's in Canton in the Hall of Fame.
That's in Happy Gilmore.
They play for a green jacket at Augusta. But, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, last month and this month, they're supposed to be great, great sports months. I mean, think about a year ago, right, what we were doing in this market. So in March, Predators winding down their season. And, oh, by the way, in April, they punched their ticket into the playoffs. You got everything that we've been talking about, a national champion in college basketball, the Masters. And, oh, by the way, the NFL draft coming to our city. It was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Just a year ago.
That was all a blur.
Gosh, can you believe that? That was a year ago we did all that, and then now look at us.
The three of us were, you know, going to Dallas, you know, for the playoffs in the first round, and also doing the draft and all of that here. And it just it all runs together. I mean, it was a blur. I don't remember sleeping a lot during that time, but it was a lot of fun. That's for sure.
Yeah, those were the days. No sleep.
Hey, can't cry over spilled milk, man. Let's push forward. Let's keep the Jeff Fisher attitude. We stay positive.
Memory lane.
We push away the negative. We stay positive.
Everything is beautiful.
Memories. Oh, the memories. We have a brain teaser that's out there today, guys.
By the way, I'm excited about the prize.
Now, this one,
it is a nice one. I've upped the ante a little bit, huh?
You did. I like that.
I didn't see the prize. Tell us about the prize, Darren.
Yesterday was a $50 gift card, but today some lucky winners, and boy, we had some winners yesterday. I think the last count, it was close to 300 people on my timeline responded with an answer. I don't know on your end. There were a lot of stuff out there. So I gave away a lot of gift cards, but today, I'm going to push it up to $75, a $75 gift card to any Circuit City location in the United States. It's got to be, though, it's used in the store. You cannot use it online. But a $75 gift card for every right answer to any location, not just Middle Tennessee, any location in North America for Circuit City. So good luck with that.
I had a...
Outstanding.
That's a great prize. I actually had one.
By the way, guys, I had answers coming in. The last time I checked my computer, I don't know what time it was, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock. It was after the voting ended for our bracket competition. I kept seeing people weighing in on the math from yesterday. So these are stimulating some people's brains. So I hope some people weigh in on this one, too. Prize or no prize.
I actually had one time somebody gave me a gift certificate to Circuit City. This was before gift cards were really prominent. It looked like a check, essentially, is what it was. And they expired. You guys remember that? And I always thought that was silly, that you had certain gift certificates that expired. Like, it's money.
Oh, right? Yeah. No doubt. Right. Exactly. No doubt. Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I always wondered the same thing, too. Like, why? Why would you expire? Why would you put an expiration date on these?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, have you guys looked at today's, I called it a brain exercise. You need to open up the lock.
This is the one you gave. Is this the one you gave us the other day, or is this a new one?
Yeah, no, I've. Okay. No, I think I've.
Okay, yeah, well, I can tell you my experience. My experience with this. This was the first one you sent, I then sent it to some other people, my family, and then the broadcast crew. So we won't get the broadcast crew involved on Twitter on this one because they've already answered this. But I can tell you that I got this on the second try. My first guess was wrong. I had to make a slight adjustment, and then I got it corrected the second time. So I don't know where that gets me in math class. It does not get me an A. I think a generous teacher might give me a B-minus, which is right around grade for me at Vanderbilt. Yeah, if I got a B-minus in a math class at Vanderbilt, I was okay with that.
As you should be.
I would have no chance.
I would have thrown a party.
No chance in a Vanderbilt math
class. Exactly. Oh, I got plenty that were quite a bit below that.
I just wish we got second chances at our answers in school. Yeah, I would have been a better student. I really would have. I feel confident about that. That is incorrect. Okay, let me try again. So you did get it the second go-around.
You know, in math, either you get it or you don't. That's the beauty of these things. Like, either right or wrong. There's not, you were close. You know, I'll give it to you. You know, that's not how math works. Either you solve the puzzle and you open the lock, which is the game you're playing today. You're trying to open a three-digit lock and find the combination based on the clues. So let's see how people are at opening the lock on the first try.
We're actually going to come back with Dan Wetzel, so let's quickly just recap for people that were very – by the way, we had I'd say – I didn't – a rough estimate. I would say of all the answers, and there were a ton, as you heard us talk about from yesterday, I'd say it was about 55, 60%, probably 60% correct. So I don't know if people cheated because there were a lot of – you know, once – there were a lot of answers out there. You could go back and look, and I didn't favorite anything until last night, pretty late. Well, it was probably, I don't know, 9 o'clock. I started, like, in other words, if I liked your answer, that means you got it right. Okay, that's what I did. But I waited until then. The value of the chicken, if you play it out, is 20. Okay, the eggs on the second row. You have to count them, so their value is 1, right? There's 3 eggs in each nest, so their value is 1. The third line, same with the bananas. The value is singular because there's 6 bananas in the bunch. So to get to 15, you've got your 3 eggs and then your 2 things of bananas at 1 banana each. So they're worth 1 point each. And then where it gets tricky is you have to look at the picture, right? And then as we talked about, the order, too, which is important. We did talk about this, and this is what gets a lot of people confused. Willie, I feel like you knew that, but I think a lot of people do not know the order of operations, and I think that's what got a lot of people thrown off by that. But
you know what's funny?
You have to look at it closely.
Darren, last night, the order of operations, Darren, I don't know if you – okay, you're in Ozark Season 1, correct?
I am another episode. So I'm through 6 episodes. This thing is getting crazy. Crazy.
Okay, good. So Season 3 is out. And so for those that might be listening that somehow took part in this contest yesterday and happened to be watching Ozark Season 3, I'm watching Episode 2 last night, and there's a substitute math teacher. And no, I'm not fooling. He is talking to his class about the order of operations. I could not believe it. I was like, what world is this? How could that be?
There you go.
That's one of those things like that is just too crazy to be coincidence. Something's going on here.
So the fourth line, if you do order of operations, multiplication first, you've got 4 eggs and 4 bananas. So 4 times 4 is 16 plus your chicken value, which is 20. And the answer was 36. That's how you get to 36. A lot of people said 38. There were a lot of 38 answers, a lot of 38s, but that's how you get it. Thought we would pass along. Thanks for all the participation. There was a ton of it. Let's get more participation going again today. When we come back, Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports. He was a part of The Scheme, the HBO documentary. We'll talk to Dan on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Darren McFarland, that's me, here on the south side of town. Down here representing in Rutherford County. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe back or over on the west side holding down the fort in Bellevue. Marquise Munson at our Wholesale Inc. Game Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. Let's bring in Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports. We were big fans of the show, the HBO documentary, The Scheme. Dan, his presence was felt in this. We watched it. In fact, I've seen it a couple times now. Of course, the story of the big college basketball scandal. They had the FBI involved and Christian Dawkins, and something I feel like we've been talking about forever, but yet really still don't have any closure on for the most part. Dan, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Oh, we're doing fantastic. You know, we went through kind of the layers of this just because you were in it and you had a chance to now sit back and watch it. Let's just start with your thoughts. What did you think of how HBO did the documentary, the 2-hour documentary?
Well, I think I thought it was good. I think Christian Dawkins can, you know, carry a show. He's certainly a great character, and that's what you need in these in documentaries. My thing is, it's the Christian Dawkins story.
That's right.
it is a lot of Christian Dawkins, right?
Yeah.
And I covered the story. I covered Christian Dawkins. I got to meet Christian Dawkins. No Christian Dawkins. But there were 10 guys that got arrested. Because, you know, there's prosecutors, there's
coaches that were involved. There's defense attorneys. I mean, there's a lot of characters in the entire story. This is Christian. This is the story through Christian Dawkins' prism. There's nothing wrong or inaccurate about that, but it's just one view of this story. And so I thought it was pretty interesting, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's the complete tale of how this whole thing went down. It's just, you know, he was a central figure, no question. He was kind of the one that tied everyone together. But it's the Christian Dawkins, you know, everything's told through the perspective of Christian Dawkins.
No question about it. Yeah, and it seems like, one, he's got a hard time admitting when he's wrong. In fact, I don't know if he ever admits when he's wrong. And two, his defense is, and I've used the example, Dan, on the show many times, is the speed limit is 55. I think that's bogus. So that area should be 70. So I'm going to go 70 because I don't believe that speed limit is correct. They've got it wrong. Their true speed limit should be 70. So when I get pulled over, I'm just going to tell them, well, this law is a bad law. And I was going 70 because I believe this should be 70. Well, that's great. And you may be right. Maybe it should be higher. But, you know, it's not going to work. You're still going to get a ticket. You're still going to have to pay money. And that's kind of his defense, right? Like, the system's broken. It's wrong. You know, these athletes should be treated differently. They deserve to get money. So, therefore, I'm just here to help them. I'm Robin Hood.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And so, obviously, he knew he was violating NCAA rules and other, you know, they tried to keep their tracks covered. I think the difference was he had no idea at any point that this would ever rise to a federal offense where he's now facing, you know, 18 months in prison. And I think that's a somewhat fair thing. It continues to seem like this is really like a prosecution in search of a crime and in search of criminals. I mean, essentially Christian Dawkins is going to prison because he gave people money. He didn't steal the money. He just gave him the money.
Yeah.
And some people didn't think so. That's a heck of a thing to go to prison for. especially when the guy that started it all and turned you in and started the undercover actually stole money from people. Like Marty Blazer's the financial planner who stole over $2 million. And when he gets nailed, he says, wait, I'll give you these guys in college basketball. And he ends up serving up Dawkins and these other guys who gave people money. So, you know, that part I get. Like, you think, all right, look, if NCAA catches this, I'm busted. If the player, you know, the NBA Players Association will sanction me, the NBA might. There's a lot of things that you go. You just don't think, gosh, wait a minute, the FBI is tapping my phone. So there's a little bit there. But, yes, he is a full believer that this is garbage. And when they change, eventually they're going to change this and it won't even be an offense. I think he has a point there. I mean, I don't know why we wasted all this time and money on this thing. they talked a big game. You know, the FBI, I remember their initial press conference, you know, we have your playbook and coaches, if you're involved in any of this, call us now. You know, don't have us come call you. And this is an ongoing investigation and we're going to try to blow the lid off of everything. And 2.5 years later, you're like, nothing changed. Other than Patino, who got fired, I think, really, for a Lifetime Achievement Award, you know, everyone's got their job except for, you know, a few assistant coaches that, you know, are relatively anonymous and, you know, low-level, you know, a 20-something would-be agent, and, you know, nothing happened. So, you know, it's like even the FBI at some point and the federal prosecutors were just like, yeah, this is garbage. We're just going to close this up. We're not even going to try to keep going.
Good points. So why do you think that is, Dan? We've been trained over the years for good reason. I mean, statistics back it up. When the FBI comes a knocking, you're in trouble. They've got the goods, and you're going down. They rarely miss. And this, sitting here today in early April, April 7th in 2020, it looks like this is a defeat. They lost. They didn't get, you know, they didn't have exactly, it didn't play out the way we all thought it would play out. So why?
It didn't play out the way they said it was going to play out, which is really the thing. And to go back, like, people are like, well, it's got overhyped. It's like, well, look, if the FBI and the Southern District of New York, I mean, these are the best prosecutors in the country. These are the ones that do the Ponzi schemes. These are the ones that do the insider trading. They do the terrorism cases. They do, I mean, they do, this is the biggest that's top place. Those two people say they're going to uncover stuff. This isn't some, you know, NCAA investigator, you know, walking around with a clipboard. This is the serious thing, and so they didn't get it done. Statistically, they did, and I think that's at some point was all they cared about. They got 10 convictions or a plea deal, so they got 10 convictions, 10 out of 10. But by no means did they change anything on this. I think they found that it's harder to pin down. It's barely a crime. I mean, look, they figured out a way to make this a crime, but it's really tight, and the cases are under appeal, and who knows if they survive. And if you don't have them dead to rights on this, you're just not going to get that conviction. So I think they figured out along the way that this isn't it. I don't know. They backed off and didn't go full boat on it. Because what they were talking about early, you know, you're like, boy, there's going to be some head coaches nailed on this. At least there's going to be a bunch of head coaches fired. And instead, you know, even the wiretaps of, like, Will Wade that are in the – some of them are in the movie, and there's more, Sean Miller and Will Wade. They buried those and didn't even bring them out during the trial, which would have, you know, potentially cost – you know, shed more light on this. The feds were trying to keep all that stuff tampered down. So even the most impactful stuff was kind of buried. It's just a really weird case. It was weird from the start. You go, why are these guys involved? And at the end you go, yeah, I was always wondering why you guys were involved.
Dan Wetzel is with us, Yahoo Sports columnist, and he was a big part of the documentary The Scheme that is being shown on HBO right now. And Dan, you know, I admit I've evolved on this because I played at Vanderbilt. I felt like at the time, I think a lot of my teammates did as well, that, you know, we weren't going to the lengths that a lot of programs that we were competing against were going to get players, secure players, all of those things. You hear things. We couldn't prove anything, of course, but there seems to be a sentiment, and I think you point this out, this type of thing in some form has been going on for decades, right? As long as there's been college football and college basketball, somebody's been playing this game in some form. And so I'm wondering, in the FBI's investigation, was there some feeling that they got that, hey, you know what, the public really, this is how, they don't want it changed. They don't want the whole system turned upside down. They're okay with the way this goes on, so let's turn our attention somewhere else. Do you think that factored in at all?
You know, I don't know, but probably. I think they thought this was going to be a big spectacular splash. I mean, they held this big press conference, and then the reviews of it were sort of like, wait, what? And then I think you get into it, and it's like, this is just going to be whack-a-mole, right? Not every school is paying players. Not every player is getting paid. But if you start really uncovering it, particularly nowadays, like, if you're a top 100 player, you have the opportunity to get paid. I mean, you just do. I think maybe the most interesting part of this whole thing to me was Brian Bowen Jr., right? The top 30 player, maybe the 30, he was ranked 30th best player in the country from Saginaw. Now, that's a good basketball player. That's a good recruit, but that's not Zion Williamson, okay? That's a good recruit, really good. And after his sophomore year of high school, Adidas paid him $20,000 to pay AAU ball for him for the summer. And we might all go, that's absolutely insane. Why would anyone pay $20,000 for a kid to play summer basketball? Well, you are what you're worth in this country. You are what you get paid. You're worth what you get paid. And we have free markets, and we have capitalism, and Adidas is a smart company, and they sell tons of shoes, and they say, this kid is worth $20,000. Then by the time he's a senior, they say, you're worth $100,000 to go to Louisville, because we already have a deal with Louisville. We're protecting the millions we pay to sponsor them, and we want to help Louisville get to the Final Four so we can recoup more of that. And by doing that, we give Rick Pitino a good player. And so in real terms, we understand what the value is of that player. And so the NCAA says, you're not worth anything more than tuition, room, and board and a small stipend when you're a college player. But what we know based on this is actually the 30th best basketball recruit, who no one's ever heard of really, other than the recruiting Knicks, is worth $20,000 as a sophomore and $100,000 as a senior. And that's the market. And so I thought that was really maybe the most interesting part. You get into that and you go, well, why are we defending somebody saying you're not worth anything when clearly you are worth something?
It sounded like to me, and you made a pretty good case during the documentary, Dan, and I've read a lot of what you've said about this, and it seems like you kind of push for a little bit of the Jay Bilas, where you should be able to just get what you're worth, right? I mean, why should it be undercover and against the rules? So do you think it would be more fair for the system if they went that direction, which has been talked about now quite a bit? I think it's more realistic now than it was maybe 20 years ago that this could happen.
I think it's more fair, I don't know, but fair, yeah. I mean, if you're worth it, you're worth it, right? Why would we deny a multi-billion-dollar corporation paying some kid from Saginaw whose dad's a police officer on disability? 20 grand is a lot of money. It's just admitting the obvious. This is happening. But I think it's fine. I would not have colleges pay players. I would do exactly what the Olympics does and allow the athletes to profit. USA Gymnastics does not pay Simone Biles, but Simone Biles makes millions and millions of dollars endorsing product, giving speeches, whatever the heck Simone Biles does. Is anyone against Simone Biles making money? Of course not. She should make every penny she could get. Michael Phelps, same thing. And if you can make it, make it. I don't think in terms of competitive balance this would actually screw anything up. I think it actually would level the playing field. Everyone says, well, Alabama will get every football recruit. Alabama already gets every football recruit. Okay? Think about somebody like, do you want to be the third quarterback at Alabama, or do you want to be the starting quarterback for 3 or 4 years at Boise State? Because they got car dealers in Boise, and they got businesses in Boise, and someone says, hey, we're going to put you on the face of, you're going to be, you know, Boise Ford dealers, you know, endorsement guy, and there's chances to make money. I think you actually level the playing field, because right now the playing field is tilted based on conference affiliation and how much you can build up your facilities. All the money that's going in gets to the players through these just backwards way, like, look how sweet our locker room is, or look how nice our weight room is, opposed to direct payments. And places like a Boise State or you know, in some ways even a Vanderbilt can't compete. But if you open up the marketplace, they can compete, because I actually think you'd make more money being a star in Nashville than you would in Tuscaloosa possibly. So there's just a lot of opportunity. It would change things. But I don't necessarily look and say, oh, the same five schools will get all the players. They already get all the players.
Well, let's ask it this way, because they did not get the coaches, right? That's part of the theme of the documentary. So what responsibility should a coach have? There are a lot of people that say, hey, what's the big deal? I'm okay with Sean Miller and Will Wade doing these things, because that's what you have to do to win. If you don't do that, you're going to get fired. That's how a lot of coaches justify it. But it's almost like the steroid thing in baseball several years ago, where a player is like, well, I don't want to cheat. I don't want to do it, but I got to keep up or I'm going to lose my job. So what should coaches do, right, who want to do it the right way?
I mean, it's a tough one, and I get the idea. I also think, as much as I think we'll go back to the original thing with the speed limit, right? As much as I think this is how it should be, these are the rules. And the system has these rules, and it makes the coaches a tremendous amount of money, because these schools are nonprofit, they don't pay taxes, they're taking every bit of all the dollars coming in, and they're paying them with their coaches, right? Does Louisville get $168 million or whatever their number was, $100-something million endorsement deal with Adidas, if Adidas can pay high school players directly? Does Duke get that money if Nike can just go and say, hey, Zion Williamson, we just signed you to a $20 million deal and you're 16 years old? No. And so these guys are profiting off a system, and you agree as you take that job to rules. There are rules in most businesses and a lot of industries that aren't against the law, and you have to follow those rules. And so I don't have that much sympathy for a coach who's violating the rules of his employment. He signs a contract. I agree to follow these rules. Even, and so it's a little bit, should you go 70, not 55? you know, yeah, I probably would agree with that. I like going 70. But, you know, if you get caught, you're going to get tagged.
We're talking to Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports.
Don't tell. No police officers. I'm not in Tennessee, so, you know, don't tell anybody.
Dan, shifting gears a little bit because I read your column and I didn't know, I don't know if you are a wrestling fan or if you were just watching, but I read your column on WrestleMania and your thoughts on that. I agree with what you were saying, that it was definitely weird not having fans. The matches, for the most part, were pretty good. I watched both nights because I am a fan and it was something to do, but your overall takeaways from the event that WWE had at their Performance Center?
Yeah, I thought they tried as best they could. I mean, I thought these are weird times. So, I thought they tried really hard and it's odd. Fans are part of the character, are a character in wrestling. It's funny because it's the one character you can't script. The fans can react, whatever, but lacking that energy, lacking the screens, the oohs, the ahs, the signs, the whole thing, the entrances that normally are just, you know, over the top that get you fired up for something, just wasn't there. But I thought, you know what? I enjoyed both nights. It was something. It was some entertainment. We watched the family, you know, most of it. And, you know, I thought they did a good job. But, you know, you think about McIntyre being Lesnar at the end for the WWE title. That's going to be, you know, if that's in Tampa's football stadium or whatever, Raymond James, it's going to be absolutely bananas in there. Instead, it's like, it's just like silence. It's so weird. So, but I credit the WWE for giving it the best shot. Hopefully they were able to do it healthy and safely for everybody. But better than nothing, but I don't think anyone's going to look back and go, wow, that was the greatest WrestleMania of all time. But kudos to them for trying. I can't say there's an easy way to do a better job on that.
Did you like the outside-the-box stuff with the Funhouse match and the Boneyard match with Undertaker?
I didn't. I did not like those. I know some people did. I'm not a big enough fan for the Funhouse one. I think really hardcore fans love that. I'm not that guy, so I didn't like those. I thought they did a good job, you know, with the Edge fight where they were in the back. Like, it kind of opened up an ability to have fights in weight rooms and on top of a truck. And I mean, you know, that was kind of good, but I didn't like it, but I get some people did.
Dan, really good stuff. We appreciate you joining us. And the next time you are in Tennessee, do not use that defense that I said, yeah, because it won't work. Yeah. I'm just here to tell you. At least that's what I've been told.
Works for Will Wade.
Well, so far it has. By the way, let's end with that. Dick Vitale last week, who, you know, the way we look at him on this show is he's always been nothing but a cheerleader for the sport. Rarely does he come out and say things, you know, that get your attention when it comes to bad or negative. And he said that his tweet was, sources are telling him that Arizona and LSU, bad things are coming. What did you make of that?
Well, the NCAA is investigating both of those, and they will take those tapes and use them. I mean, clearly, they didn't originally. So, and for a school to stand by those coaches, you take a risk of saying, why did you stand by them? I mean, you know, LSU's got, I don't know what explanation they have on the Will Wade stuff, but I'm dying, you know, I don't know how anyone with a straight face could be like, no, he's not talking about paying players there. So I think you will get hit harder by the NCAA if you fight and don't self-monitor. And I think that the perception amongst the NCAA enforcement process, I think, would be like, how have you not fired Will Wade for this? How have you not disciplined him? Why did you give him his job back? Yeah. All of that. We'll see. But I certainly, you know, Sean Miller, they haven't renewed his contract. On a rollover, he's down to 2 years to go. That's pretty telling. A school like Arizona walking into a season with a coach with just 2 years left, that kind of tells you what they're, you know, he better win big and somehow avoid this, or they're just sort of setting it up so they can get rid of him for the least amount of money possible.
Yeah, the exit plan. Dan, really good stuff. Appreciate the visit. Be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, that is Dan Wetzel with Yahoo Sports. He was a big part of the scheme, the HBO documentary. He was basically the media person that had a big portion in this whole thing. And as he talked about, it's really the Christian Dawkins story. If you watch it, you're only really getting his perspective, and, of course, his family is involved in it too. But his attorney is good. Dan does a really good job. You do get a little bit of insight from others, but it is a good point as we sit here, and I know we talked about this, but how in the world Will Wade and Sean Miller still have jobs today is just mind-blowing when you listen to those tapes. I mean, we've all seen it. We've all seen the quotes, but we always say the video changes everything. It's one thing to read quotes. It's another thing to actually sit there and watch and listen to the wiretaps, to the actual conversation with Dawkins, with Wade, and Dawkins with Miller. And it's like, you don't need much of a brain. You don't need a Vanderbilt degree to figure out what they're talking about. Trust me on that. All right, we'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, we've got the left side of our bracket whittled down to 8 athletes. We'll get the other side of the bracket, the right side, down to 8, and we'll get down to our Sweet 16 after today. You've still got a long time to get those votes in until 9 o'clock tonight, so still plenty of time to get in there. Yesterday's results, by the way, really good stuff from Dan Wetzel and Yahoo Sports. That was a good interview. So let's kind of recap what took place yesterday. We had Jeff Fisher on the show. Good conversation with him in his region. Guys, got to be honest, it was no drama yesterday at all. Everybody pretty much cruised. Really no drama at all on the left side of the bracket. Steve McNair cruising to his victory over Taylor Wan with 92% of the votes. Not exactly the 1-9 matchup you're thinking about. I mean, McNair just blowout city over Taylor Lewan. P.K. Subban goes down to the Freak, Javon Kearse. So that was the 4-5 matchup.
That was the only one that really surprised me. I thought that would be closer.
Yeah.
It was just me.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be closer.
62% of the vote going toward Javon Kearse. So that will set up the Freak and Steve McNair in the next round. Wow. That should be interesting. Keith Bullock, who we also had on the show last week, cruised to a victory over Derek Barnett with 91% of the vote. The captain, Roman Yossi, the 2 seed, cruised to a victory over Ryan Tannehill, 88% of the vote. So that will set up a Keith Bullock and Roman Yossi matchup in the next round, which should be interesting. David Price, the 1 seed in the Tim Corbin region, cruised 67% of the vote over Paul Kariya. So David Price moves on. He'll take on Frank Wycheck. The 4-5 matchup. Snedeker and Wycheck, and Frank gets 65% of the vote. So that will set up a David Price and Wycheck in the next round. Chris Johnson, CJ2K, easily over Jordan Matthews, who we love talking to. But Chris Johnson gets 81% of the vote and moves on to take on former Predators captain and the 2 seed, Shea Weber, who got 62% of the vote over Kevin Byard. We talked about that one. That one could get interesting. Not so much. So that'll set up Shea Weber and Chris Johnson in the next round. So no drama yesterday. All chalk and blowout city for the most part. But I'll tell you what it did do. It set up some really intriguing matchups for the next round of voting in those two regions. Steve McNair against Javon Kearse, Keith Bullock versus Roman Yossi, and then the Tim Corbin region, David Price and Frank Wycheck, Chris Johnson and Shea Weber. I think those should be close. I can't imagine that there's a lot of blowouts once we start whittling this thing down to where we're going.
Yeah, I don't see it. I think that there'll be some close ones, and also maybe a couple of upsets, if you want to call them that. But I'm intrigued by those matchups. I'm intrigued by some today that we have. But I think this has been a lot of fun. It's been giving us, you know, great guests and a lot of conversation.
All right, so let's set that up. Today's voting, like I said, you've got a little bit more than 10 hours to go to thegamenashville.com. go to Twitter at 1025 The Game. You've got plenty of avenues to get in there and cast your vote. So let's look at the Phil Bredesen region and the David Poile region.
All right. So Eddie George, the one seed, 91% of the vote right now against John Jenkins, who's coming up in just a few minutes on the show. So John Jenkins, Johnny Cash, he needs some help on that one. Mike Fisher and Kimo Tiiminen. And there are two matchups today that I think are interesting because you have Titans against Titans, Preds against Preds. So Mike Fisher, Kimo Tiiminen, the 412. Fisher in control, 82% of the vote right now. Blaine Bishop taking on Kevin Dyson, the 14 seed of Kevin Dyson. He is our Cinderella story because he has control right now, 64% to 36% over Blaine Bishop. So could a 14 seed continue to advance? Mookie Betts, Brad Hobbs.
I'm shocked at that one. Are you guys shocked that Dyson is that far ahead of Blaine Bishop?
Hmm.
I am. I thought it'd be closer. I didn't think it'd be a runaway either way.
Kevin Dyson has been my upset special from the get-go, and I'm a little bit surprised it's that lopsided. Yeah, but how about that? What was the percentages again right now early on?
64 to 35.
Mm,
wow. 64.5, 35.5. It's almost 2/3 to 1/3. It's interesting how the memory of a voter, you certainly remember the Kevin Dyson plays, but you know, Blaine Bishop, to me, it's not. I think even Kevin Dyson would tell you that his contributions over a longer period of time far outweigh Kevin Dyson's, because as we mentioned before, Kevin Dyson had a really bad knee injury that sidetracked his career, whereas Blaine Bishop was a perennial All-Pro, leader of the defense. I don't know. That's an interesting vote to me.
Well, and I think one way you have to look at it is there are two plays you remember Kevin Dyson for, and no disrespect to Blaine Bishop. He obviously had a huge impact on that team, but it's not as top of mind as Kevin Dyson. And so I think that definitely helps. I mean, you remember the Music City Miracle and then being 1 yard short. So I think that's definitely helping Kevin Dyson. The 2-7 matchup, we talked to B-Hop last week, Brad Hopkins. He needs some help today. Mookie Betts leading the way, 74% to 26% early on in the vote. Another one seed in the David Poile region, Pekka Rinne leads Delaney Walker, 84 to 16. Now, I'm not surprised that Pekka's leading, but I thought it might be a tad bit closer than it is right now. What do you guys think of that?
I'm not surprised at all. I mean, Pekka is, first of all, he's the one seed for a reason. And number two, the popularity. He's got the combination of both. I think that's about right.
I thought Delaney would have at least 25%, though. And he might before this is done, but
well, right now, as we've seen already in the bracket, out of sight, out of mind, man. Move on, and they're no longer part of the team. Go somewhere else, and it's like, okay. I mean, Mariota got smoked. There was a time when he was the quarterback here. You say anything that's not, you know, just puffs it, you know, pillow fighting. I mean, anything negative. I mean, people come after you like badgers, and now all of a sudden he just gets smoked. He's moved on to the Raiders and out of sight, out of mind, and they're like, okay, see you later. Jarrell Casey got smoked. So we could see where the voting is going. Once you're gone, I guess you're gone in their minds too. I don't know.
Arvy Hustle, Victor Arvidsson, the 13 seed, leading the 5 seed, Sonny Gray, 59-41. That appears to be probably the closest matchup we have. Well, the second closest matchup we have right now. Bruce Matthews with 63%. He's a 6 seed over the 14. Drew Maddox with 37. And this one we talked about that was probably going to be an interesting one, and I think we all said 60-40. Well, guess what? Right now, that's exactly what it is. Derrick Henry leads Philip Forsberg 60% to 40%.
Mm.
A 2-7.
Philip Forsberg, he's hanging in there. Now, I would say that we have the seeding about right. You know, I think you could argue, though, that Philip Forsberg might have been worthy of a 5 seed, something like that, right? Seed a little higher than a 7. Derrick Henry, of course, the late charge the last 2 years is why he's a 2, right? 3 years ago, you wouldn't have had him in the field, right? He wouldn't have been close. So Philip Forsberg has done it for longer. He's produced at a high level for longer than Derrick Henry. So that probably counts for something. So I'll be curious to see how that one goes. But Derrick Henry is, of course, probably the hottest athlete in the field, right? Nobody has done more in recent memory for his team than Derrick Henry.
Absolutely. Nope.
That is true. By the way, Bruce Matthews versus Drew Maddox currently has the most votes, and it's really not even that close. That matchup right
is
now
Drew
getting
on
the
Twitter
most
right
votes.
Now?
I don't know. But it's but you would think it with that many votes that it would be, you know, very, very close, but right now Bruce has got 63% of the votes to 37. But there's been more activity with that matchup than any of the other matchups.
Well, he did retweet
a few more votes for sure. I want to see who jumps in. Like, for example, Taylor Lewan and his crew did not really even try to mount a run at the great Steve McNair. I thought, I mean, they didn't even try to win the argument. they kind of bowed out. But I'll be curious, Sonny Gray against Victor Arvidsson. You know, that's one that I think with some Twitter influence from a couple of sides could sway it one way or the other. We know Drew Maddox and his crew at CPA, very loyal. But Bruce Matthews, of course, legendary. But, of course, you talked about the out of sight, out of mind. It's been a long time since people have watched. And unlike some of the other Titans that still have a presence in Nashville, Bruce Matthews has been gone for a long time. He went back home to his area of Texas, and we haven't really heard from him much.
Yeah, after he left, you know, for being the O-line coach under Mike Munchak. That's true. He's just being a dad now because he's got a couple of sons playing in the NFL. Are there any more left? There are a lot of Matthews. It's a big family.
Yeah, but the next generation should be coming up through here pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a big family. So a lot of guys there. I wonder how Jeff Fisher, our guest yesterday, feels about that matchup, because obviously Bruce Matthews, one of the leaders on his teams, played for him for a long time, but Jeff Fisher also with ties to CPA, both his kids went, or all his kids went there. So I wonder what his thoughts on that matchup would be.
I'd like to know what he thinks about Steve McNair versus Javon Kearse. Both of them won football games for him as a head coach.
Yes, they did. So a lot of representation in the bracket from those days, and kind of fun to go down memory lane.
But we just want people to vote. I mean, have fun with it. Do whatever your heart tells you to do. But we want good voter turnout, because we want the bigger the sample, right? The bigger legitimacy, I think, that the contest has. And so we want to make sure we get as big a cross section of voters as we can. So tell your friends, you know, retweet the link, the thread, and vote for all eight matchups. Don't just go on and vote for one, right? Make sure you vote for all eight.
Definitely. Go to the Game Nashville. .com. It's real easy to do, or you can go to at 1025 the game on Twitter, but it's there, it's readily available, and there's about 10 hours left to vote, so get in there and get your votes. John Jenkins in the On Deck Circle. We will talk to Johnny Cash, VU23, on Twitter. That's how you can find him. He's got his hands full today in his matchup with Eddie George, but we always enjoy catching up with him, so we will do that to kick off the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.